It's Daylight Savings Time. DST, the show. It sounds like it should be a show called DST. Okay, so this is episode 3. Today we're going to talk more specifically and more focused about 80s action movies, and I kind of want to talk about 80s music a little as it relates to being better, sure. More interesting narrative stories. And I think we can relate it to the action, so you go ahead and
but worse aesthetically. Are you going to agree to that?
The music in the 80s is aesthetically worse than now?
In many cases. I think that unless you're talking about just mainstream, non-movie-relatable music, I think that every single time I think about 80s music in movies, I think about horrible Rockies-style uplifting, encouraging songs.
In the early 80s, there was a lot of that.
Well, I think it went all the way through. I think that, Boogie Nights was set in the early 80s, or the late, in that area. The song, you've seen Boogie Nights, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The songs in Boogie Nights, to me, completely sum up.
Yeah,
when he decides to go into the music industry, completely sum up the 80s music thing.
Really? All the way through the 80s? I always get that as sort of like being like a 70s, 80s transfer. I think more of the new wave, like European stuff, like Duran Duran and Depeche Mode when I think of the 80s. Late 80s.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's kind of a thing that's been put in after the fact. Like in Donnie Darko, they put a lot of mid to late 80s music in there.
Tears for Fears and stuff.
And, Joy Division and all that stuff. And when I think of movies that I saw when I was... I'm the earliest I really remember in my life is probably like 6, 7, 8.
Five or so.
Yeah,
probably.
And so I remember seeing things like Space Camp. You ever see the movie Space Camp?
Yeah, I don't remember anything about
Billy Preston. And it had this horrific 80s soundtrack. It did have it had one hit song, which was that song, The Walk of Life. You do the walk.
Was that like a Talking Heads song?
I don't know. It was horrible, whatever it was. I forget who did it. But every single... quintessentially 80s movie that I think of from that time that was coming out even in the late 80s, that's how old I was in the late 80s, was just garbage. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
It's possible. We could have a difference
aesthetically,
in style.
I enjoy it greatly. I enjoy listening to songs that are telling you, this guy's got to rise above.
Yeah, exactly. Da, 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 da.
Yeah, the Karate Kid music and stuff.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Great.
Best around.
Yeah, it's a horrible... What I'm saying is, it's awful music.
Music in movies, I can concur about that on some level. But at the same time, I think a lot of the pop music now, the subject matter is less involved. Like, I have this crappy tape of this band called Ice House from the 80s, and I just listen to it all the time because I have a crappy car with just a tape player. And it's like each song one's about searching for gold and traveling around, and it's like that whole sense that there's
like
a big,
literally searching for
gold. We'll search for Spanish gold. that's an aspect of it, but it's like they're more narrative driven and they're more about stories and they're more complex emotionally than now. I think a lot of pop music is really self referential. It's self-indulgent, and it's like cry, cry, whine, whine. Nobody loves me.
So if you like stories, do you really enjoy the era of gangster rap
you're implying that it's come to a close?
Gangster
rap.
Has.
Yeah, I agree, because most of it is now it's just the same as with the pop rock music, where it's self-indulgent. It's all this music is based on one form or another. It's based on the protagonist of the song being horribly insecure.
Right.
It's either I'm insecure, so I'm going to talk about all the stuff I own and all the women I get, or I'm horribly insecure, so I'm going to cry about how alone I am.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
In the 80s, it's like the songs are
like that. You think about songs from the 50s and 60s, they're always about crying.
Whining and love and stuff. I'm not saying that wasn't there, but there was. But in the 80s and stuff, it seemed like there was they had saxophones in a lot of their music, which always added a tone, complexity. But it also...
It just reminds me of the Lethal Weapon movies. I hate saxophone in music. My dad's a sax player. He's what he does. I mean, I don't know. I like saxophone in certain types of music, but I think it has no place in pop.
That's okay. Well, we'll have to agree to disagree there on some.
Here's the thing about this: the storytelling aspect of this. This has been, there's been different periods in all of music where storytelling, during the whole free love 60s thing, there was various folkish storytelling things.
Yeah, Bob Dylan and all that.
Yes, absolutely.
Those are great. Those have like a full, but his are more like historical. They're not like a narrative. It's like Edgar Evers and blah, blah, blah.
They're generally historical. I think that the one that I remember the most personally and that I think this I kind of have fond recollections of is the, not exactly gangster rap, but there was a certain period in rap where people like Slick Rick and stuff were.
Okay.
Everything they came out with was, he actually has an album called The Art of Storytelling. His his songs were all like, I woke up today. Like
what I did.
Yeah, and they all have some sort of like social thing to it, or not. I mean,
well, even like Ice Cube's Today Was a Good Day. In the early 90s, and it's exactly that. It's just like day by day.
Yeah, and the gangster rap period was actually full of that stuff, because they tell you by what they go through in their daily living, you know, what their world is, basically.
It was before they were super popular and super rich, and they didn't have the angst anymore.
So what, you know, you brought this up by saying this was something you enjoyed. So explain to me, out of some of, you know, name some movies, name some good songs.
Okay, now you're really calling me out, huh? I don't know. You might be right. It might be a completely separate thing. It might be just that the some of the music that wasn't used so much in movies then, but is being, like you said, like Donnie Darko, used in
they
movies now. It could be an entirely retroactive thing. But the thing is that source material that was generated in that time period.
I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that we are we're kind of being sentimental about the fact that
The nostalgia factor is definitely there.
There are movies in the late 90s and early 2000s. Like probably like Simon West and Michael Bay films that featured really terrible rock acts.
Oh, you mean like Aerosmith? Like,
well, maybe not Aerosmith. It's kind of hard to use them because they've got the clout from the background. Yeah, largest super rock group in the world in terms of like, you know, let's put these guys in the soundtrack because everybody knows them.
Yeah, exactly.
And people are gonna buy. Yeah, but I'm talking about stuff like Creed and Stained and Seether and
it becomes about that soundtrack.
Back. So here's my question: in 20 years, are we going to look back on late 90s, early 2000s films fondly and say, "Oh, that was a great song by Creed"?
We won't. I can guarantee you, we won't. Well, but maybe the kids that are coming up now will.
But I got to tell you, in the late 80s, I greatly disliked new wave stuff. I didn't like Joy Division, Echo and the Bunnymen, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, yeah.
And I love that stuff now. I even like The Cure, which is kind of a stretch.
Okay.
And so I think I'm hoping that's not the case for me, that in 20 years I'm like, you know, Creed actually wasn't that bad. Because they really were that bad.
Following that same line, with a lot of new music now, even from old groups like the new Depeche Mode album that came out 2 years ago or whatever, I'm finding that on my first listen, I'm less impressed. But then if I go back to it, I'm like, oh, no, this song's good. Like, not that I hated it before, but just like, I didn't remember liking this song as much the first time.
And that'll be the case with a lot of the albums you listen to. I think that there's many things first few times I heard the Pixies, I thought they were terrible.
Yeah.
And my brother actually owned a Pixies album before I did, and he was really young when he got it. And I think he got it because
he
was
a hipster street cred there.
Well, he was really into skateboarding, and so it was something he maybe read somewhere. And I thought, this is awful. And then I saw Fight Club, and then the end of Fight Club.
Where is my mind?
I was like, well, you know, I actually like that song, and I'd heard a version by somebody else covered that song. I forget who it was, and I heard it by them, and I thought, you know, that's actually not a bad song. So I started listening to them again, and I they're one of my absolute favorite bands of all time. I want to talk about enjoyably bad action films, because there's one.
Some might say it's one and the same.
Sometimes they are. Other times,
but you and I will fight to prove that there are some honest to God good 80s action
films. I'll go to the grave
exactly.
for 80s action films. I particularly, the ones that are usually highly. I mean, the thing is, there's a lot of the first 80s. Super violent action films were actually critically acclaimed because they did something very different for the time. And now you see any sort of, that's what I'm going to talk about, is they don't even make that type of movie anymore. But about the bad ones, I think it is different because you look back on these things. I guarantee you that nobody critically liked Showdown in Little Tokyo when it first came out.
And that is 80s.
It's actually it. It's probably 90 or 91, yeah. Okay. But it's an 80s action film.
Yeah, I think just to make this clear for everything that we talk about, when we usually talk about decades and we're talking about 80s and 90s, I would say, and I've observed this just like through historically way things go, is it's usually about a 2 or 3 year draw over.
So oh, absolutely.
Like, what's going on in the 70s disco and stuff is still going on, like when Airplane is made in like 1980, 1981. Yeah. So really there's that leeway period. So I would say that 80s stuff, if you're talking about 80s stuff, you're talking about primarily from like 82 to 92.
Yeah, no,
and
I,
the
I'd
same
agree
if
with
you're talking about 70s, even if you're talking about like 50s, I mean it's like 52 to 62.
Yeah. And I think there's reverse crossover too. I always feel like First Blood which was made in 79 is an 80s film. I almost feel like Star Wars in 77 is an 80s
type
film.
Those are all the precursors, yeah, you know. Yeah. You start to see the late 70s when all these action movies and stuff start to come about.
So
Alien.
When it comes to bad movies being enjoyable, I think the you know, of course they have some sort of camp or kitsch value, and Showdown in Little Tokyo has, and you haven't seen this yet, right?
No, okay. But we're going to do something.
I guarantee you I'm going to make you watch this.
I have no, will not need to be forced.
Okay,
I think
I'll
like
force
two,
you
two,
by
two,
gunpoint
two,
to watch
two,
this
two, 2 weeks from now or something, I'll have the time.
Awesome.
To be able to
so,
get together and do it.
This movie has terrible, atrocious dialogue.
Okay.
The worst acting you've ever seen, except for a certain, you know the bad guy who was, the guy who played Shao Kahn in Mortal Kombat movie?
Yeah.
Okay. So that guy, you know, he's the bad Japanese or Chinese guy in every Asian movie.
Oh, he was in like Rising Sun and stuff.
Oh yeah,
right?
Yeah, Rising Sun. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Was he in the both Mortal Kombat movies, One and Annihilation? Or
I don't
they
remember.
Recast
no, him? I don't think they recast him. I don't because I think that there were enough Mortal Kombat fans. No, I don't
yeah,
know about
exactly.
That. So this guy's, you know, he plays the bad guy. And actually, he was the bad guy in another Dolph Lundgren movie that I recently saw called Bridge of Dragons.
Oh, wow.
And this was made in later on in the 90s, and it might have actually been the early 2000s. It's terrible. No, it doesn't matter when it was made. This movie is it's set sometime in the future, Bridge of Dragons. It's set sometime in the future. It's Dolph Lundgren is the right-hand man of that Japanese
guy.
I don't remember his name.
Let's just call him Yakuza leader.
Sure.
Kind of
sure.
Like I call that one guy from Big Trouble in Little China that's got the big butcher knife.
Right.
And he's also in Die Hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just call him.
And
Uzi.
He was in Lethal Weapon.
I call
yeah.
him. Yeah, it was Endo in Lethal Weapon.
Right.
I just call him Uzi guy.
Uzi guy. Okay.
And you know the guy that was in Die Hard, Robert Davi, who was one of Johnson's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was in License to Kill.
Right.
Drug
right.
Dealer. I just
right.
call him drug dealer guy. Because that's pretty much what he's doing. He's drug dealer guy in like half the movies he's in.
He was in that NBC show Profiler.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
He,
it was like we.
It was
maybe,
it was
me
totally
and my brother would watch it and kept waiting, like, dude, drug dealer guy's going to turn evil any minute
and
now.
Yeah, what was wrong with that picture?
I don't know.
He can't be a good guy. Anyway, so, okay, Yakuza guy. He was, so in Bridge of Dragons, he's this guy who's, he's the military leader of this, it's almost set in, like, this apocalyptic time, though they didn't have the budget to make it look like that. And the only reason you can tell that is because all the military vehicles, helicopters, jeeps, have a crudely drawn 666 on the side. They never mention this, but it's on all the vehicles. They never.
Weird.
Yeah, it's an awful movie. So this guy, they're clearing out this rebel outpost, and Dolph Lundgren is his right hand man.
And he decides, no, they just want food, right?
You know? No. He slaughters all of them.
Okay.
And then later on, he's fighting in this rundown place that does underground fighting. And they stand
for
on
a little extra cash.
Yeah, right. And he just does it for fun.
Some horror money.
And
or something.
This girl comes in, she's got her face covered and everything, so you can't see who she is. She's the princess,
okay.
Right? So she thinks she's a pretty good fighter too. So they fight.
He fights a girl.
Oh yeah, he doesn't know it's a girl. Because he wouldn't. He's too honorable.
Or what?
I don't know. No, she's got some pretty loose fitting clothes on. He beats her, and then she runs away. But he sees her eyes. You know, in the mask. So,
and then
he's intrigued.
He's gay, you know, he's like, well.
I don't think it was that sort of thing.
Okay.
So then he goes on later, and he turns out that Yakuza guy, of course, is very, very evil, which you can tell from the beginning. But he starts to change allegiances, and it's bad. But it wasn't so bad that it was enjoyable because it didn't have the dialogue. It didn't have
the really jokey, horrible
dialogue.
Which I think usually is some kind of way for like the writers or somebody to wink at the audience
and
on
say,
something and say,
"Listen,
yeah,
man,
we
know
what we're doing.
I was paid to do this. Don't get mad at me." So, Showdown in Little Tokyo has it's a terrible storyline. It's awful. There's, you know, this one part the Yakuza guy. calls in some girl who kind of betrayed. There's hookers and sluts everywhere.
Of course.
And so this
would be appropriate.
Hooker and or slut kind of betrayed him somehow and said something to the media or something like that. And so he calls her into the office in front of all his underlings and proceeds to take off her clothes. And she thinks, well, she's like, I'll do anything to repay you now. And so she's taken off her clothes and she's kind of bent over a table. And he gets behind her and he kind of positions himself. And then he grabs a sword and cuts off her head.
Oh, wow.
And stuff like that. I mean, there's enjoyable moments in it.
That's awesome.
But the dialogue is just so bad. There's awful jokes. And I think the reason why that is because Brandon Lee was just starting out as an actor at this time. And I think people kind of thought he was going to be comic relief. Mm-hmm. Like a comic relief type of action
hero. Like a Jackie
hero.
Chan.
Almost,
like
almost.
Before Jackie Chan had crossed over, let's get a slapsticky, let's do that with him.
And he, of course, he shows great martial prowess in his, in his fighting and everything. But then he says ridiculous stuff all the time. but they give a lot of bad lines to Dolph Lundgren, too. And there's one part when he and Brandon Lee are supposed to be thought to have been killed.
Uh-huh.
And they appear, and the bad guy says, I killed you two. You're both dead. And Dolph Lundgren screams at him, hell sucked. We came back.
Nice.
But
in his, like Masters of the Universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
he's dead
voice.
Serious. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's, I don't want to give away too many of the lines to you. There's awful lines. And it's very, very enjoyable. I think the amount of violence and stuff in it isn't super bad. I think if you put tons of gratuitous violence into something with really awful dialogue, it makes a great family film. Everyone should enjoy something like that.
It's fun for everybody.
It is fun for everyone. Speaking of that, I don't know if you've ever noticed this. I first noticed this in whatever year it was. I was going to CR, College of the Redwoods, down in South Eureka, and I had a 3-hour break in between a couple of classes one day.
Oh, that
and
so sucks I, having a 3-hour
Yeah,
break.
So I went to go see Starship Troopers, which I'd already seen a couple times in the theaters. So I went to see it, and I sit down, and I'm in the back. I like sitting in the very back, because if I'm not too close, I get headaches. I don't know. I
can
almost see the whole screen. And so I'm sitting there, and there's the shower scene where everyone's naked, and there's a couple other nudity scenes, and in one of those...
It's a Verhoeven go-to, if you think about it, is this sort of this unisex... locker room thing, if you go all the way back to RoboCop, right?
And so he, they're showing all this stuff, and I look over, because I've been hearing these kind of squeaky noises, and the squeaking noises were like a 3- and 5-year-old child, like a 3-year-old boy, 4-year-old boy, and a 5- or 6- or 7-year-old
girl. Toddlers,
And with their grandma, who shouldn't have been seeing this. The grandma shouldn't have been seeing this. Woman in her late 70s wearing, a doily, and I don't think women wear doilies, but and they're sitting there, and Grandma, she's like, shh, watch the movie. And these people are slaughtering each other, and people's heads are getting blown off, and eyes being gouged out, and people cut in half, and nudity and language. And I thought, man, that was really something else. So I saw 300 when it came out, and I was sitting there, and I looked behind me again, and there was like a 5-year-old kid and an 8-year-old kid and their mom. And she was like, had the one kid on her lap, and he was bouncing up and down happily. Yay! Do you think it's appropriate for kids to see that stuff?
I think. I can't speak to how it's going to affect them. I mean, something like Starship Troopers, it was early CG, and a lot of it seems very almost cartoony.
It's still brutal.
Yeah, it is brutal, and I think they made a point of that sort of brutality. You're right. That one I think is pretty awful. What was the second one again?
Oh, 300.
300. 300 was R or PG-13?
It's R. It's totally R. Yeah.
I haven't seen 300, so I can't speak to how brutal it is. I imagine there's probably a degree of it, but it's also a lot of CG. All I can know is, let's see, what was the most brutal thing I saw when I was a little kid? I think my parents brought me in, and we saw, I saw Total Recall as a kid.
Oh, really?
My
parents would never.
I know. So that's a little strange. And like Terminator 2 and stuff. But I'm thinking about that. Like with Total Recall, there wasn't a huge amount of gratuitous violence. That really, it wasn't that bad. Neither was Terminator 2. I think my parents had a sense of a line, but my parents were certainly not censoring stuff from us.
My parents wouldn't let me watch anything, man. My dad let me go see. He actually took me with a bunch of my friends to see Speed when I turned like 15.
Uh huh.
or 16. I don't even know what year it came out. But I was old enough teen that I should have been watching that stuff anyway. I should have been. But
you could have.
Yeah. And
what was Speed is R. So
it's R. Yeah.
I have had the unique experience of, and for another Brandon Lee movie for the other one that he did with
Rapid Fire.
For Rapid Fire, yeah. Me and a couple of my friends went to go see it, and we're like, 14 or something, and the lady called us out on it. It's that weird situation where it's like, what? Come on.
Yeah, seriously? You're not going to let us in?
You're not going to let us
in. You didn't do the South Park thing where you had a homeless guy buy you the tickets?
We actually,
these are my kids.
And my dad came down real quick because he was just like four blocks up. He's like, yeah, that's cool. Okay. And then walked right out. We were like five people in the theater, so it was pretty funny.
So there's a certain thing with the bad films that I really enjoy. And there's bad action films now that kind of do the same thing. But the problem is that they're still desperately trying to make money in the movie industry. So what they're doing is they're making what used to be bad action films that were rated R. They're now bad PG-13. Action films that are PG-13. So it's
Alien
kind of
versus Predator. That's all you have to
really
say.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, I was thinking of there's one that came out recently called The Marine with John Cena, the wrestler. And the reviews, I haven't seen it. The reviews I read, even by hipster high class people, were like this is actually very enjoyable because. It seems like the people who are acting know that this is a bad movie, and they're just having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
And, Robert Patrick, they said, just goes absolutely nuts and over the top, like he wanted to. He knew this was sucky. He wanted the paychecks, but I'm going to have fun with this.
Well, have you seen The Unit? It's a CBS show that David Mamet works on.
No,
I've never watched it. It's actually, he's in that, and he's actually pretty darn good in that.
Patrick is?
Robert Patrick, yeah. And
does Mamet actually do anything for it besides executive producer?
Well, no, it's not like a Michael Crichton thing, and I kept up with this. He created the show, co-created the show, I think with Sean Ryan, the guy that does The Shield.
Okay.
And it's based on the book The Delta Force, which I think is kind of what that Chuck Norris movie and second movie was based on. But it's Mamet comes in and writes quite a few of them. So, maybe I would say he wrote, five in the first season of 13 episodes.
But he's not directing
all
them.
Good. No, I don't think he's directed any of them.
Because you can tell when he's directed something because of the stone-faced...
But the dialogue is totally Mamet-esque. Like seeing these hardcore, elite soldiers.
The Unit. Which is the one with Dennis Haybert in it?
Dennis Haspert? Yeah.
Is that the
one?
Haspert?
It's on Wednesdays at 9 or something. And it's, the only show on CBS I would watch. But I watched the first season of 13.
Sparkling recommendation.
And I watched the first four of season two. And there's an aspect where it relates to their wives and stuff that's going on.
Oh, sure.
Out on the base. But every now and again, there'll just be some really cool story. And it's more about just sort of seeing these guys just be infallible, pretty much. If something goes wrong, it's because they usually want it to go wrong.
Mm.
Or somebody else screwed up, and then
they're godlike.
Godlike. And there's just something kind of cool about seeing these guys know what they're doing. And with the Mamet dialogue and the Mamet stories, they're a little more involved.
I got to admit, there is something fun about reading a Tom Clancy book and knowing that
the good guys are
going to
win.
Well, not just that, but no matter what happens, that somehow the Americans are never even really worried about the fact that they're just going they're superior in every single way, which is extremely
it can border on jingoistic.
Oh, totally jingoistic.
The Unit has a decent bit of that, but at the same time, it'll be critical too. It'll be showing the wives figuring out how they get crappy health care through the army, and there's not proper services that they need and stuff. So it's not. It kind of does both. I wouldn't say it rides the fence. It just kind of points out both aspects. And if these guys are the elite, they pretty much have to be the way that they are. I don't know if it makes sense.
I'm surprised it hasn't been canceled yet. It sounds too good to be on.
Well, it's a CBS thing. CBS is. There's weird shows.
CBS doesn't even care about what shows they have on. That's why they don't cancel
really
things.
Don't. I don't know if they have anything that's good on.
Because NBC will cancel something at the drop of a hat. Various shows are canceled on Fox and ABC and NBC
before they even started.
Oh yeah.
Fox is the biggest for actually doing shows that seem like they could be cool and then just shit canning them, which I guess so they can show more crappy Fox.
Well, what I'm thinking of is the fact that NBC will put on shows that don't deserve to be on TV and then they realize two episodes into it. But they already waste all the money in the pilot and the production
and
everything. They've given these people contracts and it seems like the people in charge of putting things on TV these days are retarded. Mostly retarded.
Well, it's probably always been that way. It's a lot of predict and then realize you're wrong because people don't like it. Just even if Paul Haggis wrote it, doesn't mean that anyone's going to tune in to watch it.
Oh my gosh, I hate that guy.